Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO at BrightPath, and with me today is...
Bray Wheeler, Consultant at BrightPath.
This is our weekly Brightcast edition, where we talk about recent news and upcoming events and what they might mean for businesses and the private sector. And we're just a little different this episode as we looked through the news this morning, and we're recording this on Monday, August 12th. As we looked at the news this morning, really one topic was really dominating the news that we thought had private sector impact, and that is China. So we're going to start by, again, talking about protests in Hong Kong. I awoke early this morning, early afternoon Hong Kong time, but I awoke early this morning to learn that the Hong Kong airport was completely shut down because thousands of protesters were occupying what looks from the photos I've seen to be essentially every square inch of real estate in the Hong Kong airport.
Mm-hmm.
So inbound flights were canceled, outbound flights were canceled, and really weekend protests led to an airport closure. Bray, what do you see going on here?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that. I mean, it's the next kind of evolution of what they've been able to do. You know, they've targeted a lot of these more disruptive kind of major logistical and transportation features, government locations, things like that, where they're going to get the most bang for their buck in terms of attention and disruption, really without direct violence. Now, certainly, you know, there's back and forth on how much violence there's actually taking place. But in terms of just the disruption and the attention, you know, this has been the protesters' MO.
There were a couple of pieces of related news kind of feeding into the airport shutdown this morning that came out over the weekend. One was, there were a number of protests throughout Hong Kong over the last couple of days. I think it's the 10th weekend in a row that they were major protests. There was tear gas fired, which is becoming also more of a norm to see that level of force from the police. There was also an interesting article, I want to say it was in Foreign Affairs magazine, on their blog over the weekend, but it may have been elsewhere, about protest technology and kind of false news and how both sides were using that in the Hong Kong protest through social media in order to put out their version of a narrative. I think the protesters have been very effective in using video to show their side of the story and what has gone on. And now law enforcement clandestinely appears to be doing something very similar, planting stories in social media from the other side to kind of counter the narrative. And that's before we get to the point in our lives where this is being done by AI and machine intelligence and these deep fakes that we keep hearing about.
Yeah, it's not that it's unheard of that certainly opposition sides are putting, you know, videos or posting pictures that certainly depict a certain way, but just the level of engagement and use of those things is a little bit unique with the Hong Kong protests. That's it seems like everything that kind of has historically kind of been a tool or a method on either side has kind of come into play. But also some of this new stuff, or kind of bordering up, as you said, kind of bordering up to some of this new stuff with the fake images and fake video and fake sounds and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's not overt, but they're encroaching on that kind of indirectly being used.
It's almost like there's a different level of sophistication here that we haven't seen, which makes sense. We're talking about democratic protesters in Hong Kong and all the sense of innovation and freedom that comes with that. And China, the rising great power, who has made a name for themselves in some ways because of their technological capability, really only rivaled by the United States in the great power conflict.
Yeah, I think to your point, the level of technology use in everyday life, the level of education, the level of all those things are definitely coming into play here in a different way than we've seen in some of these other countries, where they're upset about lack of access to those things and lack of access to be able to grow and to use technology and to have that accessibility. That's not the case between China and Hong Kong, they have it. So it's almost like a protest on a different front, kind of a 21st century protest almost, with just every technological piece coming into play. And we're seeing it, and we're hearing it everywhere. I mean, it's being covered everywhere.
There were two other omnibus bits of news that came about with the protests today. Things that happened this morning, U.S. time. The first is that China made a statement about the protests, that these were actions of terrorists. Sprouts of terror. Okay, that's very Chinese. Sprouts of terrorism erupting in Hong Kong. Is this an escalation, do you think, in terms of rhetoric?
I certainly think it definitely is an escalation on China's part. To use that kind of language, to throw that out, you know, to not directly say it is terrorism, to kind of, as you said, the kind of the Chinese kind of language version of that, or, you know, communication version of that, with sprouts of terrorism, kind of masking it as, hey, this is starting to evolve into this and we're starting to become concerned, becomes what will likely be a justification should they escalate this from, you know, use of military or kind of force, martial law that they declare. They're laying the seeds to be able to do that kind of stuff.
The other bit of news relates to what you just said, and that's, could the military be used? Could there be more physical escalation? And there were almost what I would say some tinfoil hat wearers on social media this morning talking about, hey, there's convoys of military trucks making their way through Shenzhen towards the Hong Kong border. And I think a lot of people went, yeah, okay, I mean, you know, you look like somebody that might wear a tinfoil hat from time to time. Right. But then China came out and admitted that, yes, we have placed 12,000. They described it as riot police, but the vehicles are clearly military. But of course, there's not much differentiation in China between the two sometimes. So they're at the border. This appears not to be a conspiracy. They really are there. So this is kind of a physical warning to the protesters that we may decide to assert ourselves.
Yeah, I think China is very much preparing for that possibility, or at least playing the leverage that they have to be able to take control of the situation in a way that maybe doesn't even escalate to the use of it. But they're definitely starting to demonstrate and starting to position that use of force and those cards that they have available that certainly Hong Kong protesters do not have, because the police are certainly not, you know, gonna take their side necessarily in this situation. So they're at a disadvantage in that sense. So China's playing every advantage that they have, without going full escalation, because it is a little bit of a game changer, like we've talked in weeks past, where should China escalate to that moment, this becomes more likely a global situation rather than just kind of a Hong Kong China, with some kind of global awareness and kind of monitoring because of Hong Kong's position in the global economy and its relationship with certainly Western countries. Definitely takes a different face should China kind of use force in mass within Hong Kong.
And I would expect, and I'm speculating here, if China decides to directly intervene with mainland China military or police, that's going to happen extremely quickly and without warning. Right? It'll be like, yes, if I draw a parallel to what we saw in Cairo in 2011 with the Arab Spring, we went from relatively easy to get around the city and safe to get around the city to people not being able to leave their condo or home because they couldn't cross town to get to work, yep, or to visit family. It's going to happen at that scale and speed, and it's going to be very difficult to get people out. And I don't remember, there's 90,000 Americans there. The number is really high.
Yeah. It's a really, really high percentage of Americans and, you know, other Western countries, citizens from other Western countries. You know, and I think the interesting piece that kind of comes into play that, you know, I don't know how much impact it has, but it's a little bit of a kind of an interesting thought, is should China elect, to your point, go in mass and do it relatively quickly, typically that's something that would take place overnight. in the nighttime hours, that they would just show up, take control, and when people wake up in the morning,
it's over.
It's over. It's a game changer. What's happening, though, with these protests is a lot of them are happening afternoon, into the evening, in the overnight. So there, it's almost a 24/7 operation on the protester front, that there is no good moment for China to kind of just sneak in, take control of Hong Kong, and have it be done. They're going to be seen. It's going to be felt. It's not going to be quite the clandestine operation that I think China would like it to be.
So when it comes to Hong Kong, and then we can move on to the next two topics that we outlined for today, our message to businesses really remains the same. This is something that you need to continue to monitor. I think you've got to be cognizant of the fact that this may move so quickly you don't have an opportunity to respond or to put other plans in play. So now is the time to plan for those various contingencies. Like, do you want your expatriates there if the stuff goes down between Hong Kong citizens and the mainland? Do you want to move in advance of that? What continuity implications could this have for your business? And I think any way you slice this, you're running the risk of getting caught in the middle of this and then being unable to react until it's truly over.
And I think even just in kind of probably to somewhat of a lesser degree, just as we've seen, you know, the airport being disrupted, and we've talked about this in weeks past too, just that Hong Kong is a travel hub. So even if you don't have an operation in Hong Kong, but you use Hong Kong as a transit point to hit other countries, you may want to start evaluating whether or not in the short term, near term, that continues to be the spot that you want to transition folks through, or does Tokyo or Seoul or somewhere else become more of the right spot for you?
Yep.
What's the risk reward of doing that? Is it cost effective to start making those switches now?
Yep. What's our second China topic?
Second China topic, still somewhat related to the Hong Kong issue, and kind of an interesting nexus there too, that I think not only plays kind of in the line with kind of China's message on Hong Kong, so it definitely has some global implications to it, but I think more to the point of what we're discussing here from a private sector standpoint, from a corporate standpoint, is some branding issues with some different products. So over the weekend, several companies have kind of gotten embroiled with some China controversy, Versace, Coach, and Disney, in terms of some t-shirts these companies have put together in which they've listed Hong Kong, Macau, and Taipei or Taiwan as separate from China. So Beijing, Shenzhen has been listed as city with the country. So Shenzhen, comma China, but with Hong Kong and Macau, they're listed separately as just Hong Kong, Hong Kong, or Macau, Macau. And then Taipei is Taipei, Taiwan, which in China's view is highly offensive to a one China policy that they have and one China vision that they take issue with. But also feeds that narrative that's going on in Hong Kong and some of those sensitivities. But I think just from a corporate branding standpoint, it kind of, not only is it an issue itself, just from that market and those Chinese customers, you know, looking at that and being offended by it and kind of impacting market space, but also it kind of leads into the need for corporations to really have kind of somewhat of a review process with some of their products to highlight some of those sensitivities that may come into play and may impact you. You know, we've seen it certainly with Israel and Palestine through products, cultural appropriation, use of different icons and symbols. The U.S. flag is always one. But just those things when companies are using products or branding or things like that, these things pop up. They have an impact and they become a distraction.
I mean, this is, from an international relations standpoint, this is one of the greatest sins you can commit in a playing field where China is present, is to refer to Hong Kong or Macau as separate than China. But the biggest sin of all in international relations where China's there is to refer to what they think of as Chinese Taipei, the wayward province of Taiwan, as Taiwan, as an independent power. I mean, right or wrong, that's the way diplomacy is conducted when you're talking about these things. And Disney and Versace and Coach are well-respected international companies, particularly Disney, who operates in China, and really kind of stepped in it with this approach. So China really had some words for them over the weekend, and it's caused all three companies to apologize.
Yes. And like I was saying before, too, this, these types of situations are easily catchable, easily mitigated, but if they're not, they become front page news. And to your point, particularly with China and the volume, and like we talked about, you know, just right before, the circumstance of what's going on in Hong Kong and that narrative of Hong Kong being a part of China, you know, when you kind of step into it and then step in it in the middle of something else, it becomes a serious brand component. And China's a big market and they're a big player in the global economy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So I'm not sure if there's anything here to monitor. Certainly companies should be culturally sensitive on this particular topic. Make the right decision by your company.
When I think if you're fortunate enough to have, or, you know, you've invested the resources into it, you know, from a reputation monitoring, from a crisis response monitoring, you know, there's opportunities. We've seen it with other companies. Company used to work for became kind of a cross-functional group that got put into place to kind of review some of these things as a point for, you know, different merchandising or branding or communications or whatever it might be, to be able to go and use it as a resource to look and say, hey, this looks all great, but if you do this, we're going to have an issue because, you know, listing Hong Kong as separate from China is going to be an issue. Or used before, Israel-Palestine, you know, was a common one. Putting Palestine on things, you know, causes issues. So there's really having a mechanism or having a thought process or starting to think about from a rep management standpoint, from a kind of incident response standpoint, you know, starting to have some of those reviews or those conversations, highlighting those as potential issues at the very least, could become effective in mitigating some of those, or at least getting ahead or being prepared to respond.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that those are very important things to have in place. If you're gonna do business on a global scale, then you need to understand the sensitivities involved and such.
Yep.
So our last topic for this week's edition is just in general about some current news around tariff and currency issues between China and the United States. There were two big announcements around this last week, both done by the president. The first is that he was adding a 10% tariff to products that were not currently seeing a tariff from China to the United States. China retaliated following that tariff announcement by saying that they were going to stop buying grain from the United States. That's a pretty significant impact on the Midwest, where most of the grain used in the world is grown, and China is the biggest market for grain in the world and buys a significant amount of grain from the United States. So hard to know where that's going. Interestingly enough, on NBC News this morning, I saw that there was a poll of farmers in Indiana, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, I believe were the states, about the tariffs, and 57% said they supported the president's action. The other thing that happened between the U.S. and China last week is that the United States, for the first time, declared China to be an international currency manipulator, that they were deliberately manipulating the yuan, the Chinese national currency, which then, after an initial very negative response, China came back and said that they would not devalue the yuan in the international markets. Their initial response, by the way, is that this was a ridiculous accusation by the United States, but then within 12 hours, they said, well, we won't be downgrading or otherwise manipulating the yuan.
Well, and I think they were trying to combat the perception, at the very least perception, that they were doing it in response to the tariffs as a weapon to kind of counteract the tariffs that were put into place, and that it was reactionary rather than they did it because it was the right economical thing for China to do independent of tariffs, was kind of the narrative they were trying to kind of re-put out after kind of stepping in it.
So these are definitely two issues to watch. The tariff situation when it comes to grain and the Chinese deciding not to buy U.S. grain. I'm not actually sure how sustainable that is. I think the grain in the world typically comes from the United States, although Russia grows a significant amount of grain as well. But I'm not sure if that threat will actually turn out to be true or not. But certainly the trade war continues to heat up. And that's definitely an issue that businesses should continue to monitor.
Yeah, I think especially going into kind of the fall and winter, when typically the Midwest, the big producers of it, are going to go into winter season, and having a lot of that stored up, and how long has that been stored, and whether or not that can be, you know, sent over. So even though we've grown it, we're holding it, kind of how does that play? I think it's, to your point, the sustainability of some of that is in question, but timing is certainly another piece to it too, that, you know, the fact that this is taking place right now in comparison to that fall winter time period where there's a little bit lower risk or pressure from it. We'll have to see.
Mm-hmm. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back with our regular topical episode next Monday. Thanks for listening. Hope to hear from you again soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe through your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.